And good morning. We're back here on the Mighty 690 KGGF. I'm Brandon Tamman, taking Kyle High's spot here for just a little bit. We'll get into open line probably in the 9 o'clock hour, but the next 15 minutes or so, we are going to be talking with infection prevention nurse Pilar Davis and Dr. Whitney Klein from CRMC joining us here this morning. Appreciate you both for coming on here today.
Thanks
Hello,
for having
thank
us.
Thank you.
All right, well, let's start here. Pilar, I know we have had you in here before. Dr. Klein,
yes.
First time in here, so we do appreciate this very much. The current state of COVID-19 kind of here in Coffeyville, Montgomery County, what general update can we provide? I know recently we did have a new confirmed positive case within the last day or two here in Montgomery County. Total cases now at 13, but
that's correct.
Generally here in Southeast Kansas, in the last week, we've been pretty steady. We haven't seen anything too drastic
no
as far as an
spikes.
Increase, but the current state here here locally.
Well, and I really think that a lot of that has to do with how well the community is doing with the social distancing and staying at home and wearing the masks when you're out. And I know that sometimes, especially at this point, you know, we really thought we would see a huge spike in cases around here, but I think it's because we did so good about getting ahead of the game. And so just continue what you're doing, and it's because of the community's efforts and that everybody has been doing is why we haven't seen this. So
absolutely.
If you are really feeling like, man, you know, we've done all this stuff, but nothing happened, it's that was the point.
That's what we wanted.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
That's the point of why we implemented all the precautions.
And I know the hospital is has been adjusting, and we'll kind of get your thoughts on potentially how the hospital is going to adjust maybe once we get kind of on the back end of this. But Dr. Klein, I know pediatrics is something you wanted to talk about here and kind of transitioning into that next week. There are some things going to be happening there.
Yeah, the difficult part for pediatrics is just because the whole world is shut down, schools are closed, things like that, children still need well child care. So we've been closed since about middle of March to all well child checks and only doing the most essential visits in the office, and trying to, for me, to triage as much as I can over the phone. All of my patients have my cell phone number, so I get lots of texts and calls day and night. Love you all, by the way. And those patients have been very good about staying home and wanting to stay home. As we move on now, and our curve, like we said, is nice and flat, and we're getting close to the other side, starting next week, we're going to open up, starting to see children, all children from birth to two, and scheduling well child checks. if you call the clinic, 620-688-6566. Ask for myself or one of my nurses, Jessica or Haley. And for right now, we're handling that scheduling to make sure we can really pack those kids in. And after those first 2 weeks of the little ones, then we'll start opening up to the 3 to 5 age. And then we'll start opening up to older children. If you are on Facebook and you're a patient of mine, request me as a friend and you'll get updates on that from there as well. But our goal is to make sure that children are vaccinated, that we don't come out of this on the other side with an epidemic of pertussis or something else that's completely preventable.
Right, and we even talked before we came on the air here this morning with, again, the potential of eventually getting on the other side of this, but there's also that chance again of a second wave and kind of getting out ahead in front of a potential second wave.
And one of the things that we're using as a primer right now as doctors is this 1918 Spanish flu epidemic. We talked about that a little bit before, that the first wave killed about 3 million plus people, and the second wave came much later when they opened things up and we lost like 30 million people. So that second wave, back then they didn't really know as much as we do now about spread of communicable diseases and public health. So I'm hoping that our second wave won't be that tragic, and that people will continue to wear their mask and to stay away from people as much as possible. Now, I have to say, back in Japan, when we had the first SARS kind of outbreak, the Japanese people started taking on wearing masks all the time. We all saw Michael Jackson start wearing it in the 90s and those kinds of things. It became a fashion statement almost. And a lot of Asian countries are doing that. And by that, you know, when you look at Japan, their rate of COVID right now is much lower than ours per capita. So I think that's really important to stress, that these masks that we have on, wearing them into the fall, we start getting into August, maybe at that second curve starting to come, and then flu season in the fall, that's going to be really big. So the question is going to be, wear your mask, stay at home when you're not have to be out somewhere, and will we be starting school or not?
Yeah, and that's, again, we kind of talked about potentially that second wave, which could be around the transition from summer into fall, when, of course, that's when kids are supposed to be going back to school, so it could be a very challenging thing. So we're trying to flatten this curve as much as possible. We're talking with infection prevention nurse Pilar Davis and Dr. Whitney Klein from CRMC joining us here this morning on a KGGF. You know, I wanted to get your thoughts on this. So I don't know if you saw, we were reading this in our state news here this morning. So there is a commissioner, city commissioner in Manhattan, who on a meeting earlier this week basically said, well, you know, maybe he's feeling to the point. He's so frustrated that, you know, these businesses are closed down and a lot of people are unemployed and whatnot and so forth. But he basically had the comment of saying, well, why doesn't everybody just get coronavirus so we can, you know, just get through this quicker? And he retracted his comments, but he already kind of said it, so it's out there now. But, I mean, obviously, that's the last thing we're trying to do. We're not trying to get everybody infected just because people think, well, if we get everybody infected, we could be done with this quicker.
Yeah, and people are talking about trying to get to a point of herd immunity. That's really, I think, what that conversation starts at. So to get to herd immunity, protection against a certain thing, you have to get to where 80 to 90% of the population has had it or has been vaccinated against it and has antibodies against that virus. If we had 80 to 90% of our population positive for COVID-19, we know what the numbers are. That's a lot of human beings dead. So the whole idea at the beginning was to social distance, wear your mask, stay away from people, stay home as much as you can, flatten that curve out. And just like we talked about with the clinic opening up, we're, like I said, I say we're going to pack those kids in, but we're seeing kids every 30 minutes. So my goal is a parent checks in, they don't see anybody else. They come back to a room and the next person shows up. When they do the adult side in the next week or so, they're going to be opening up where you'll have one adult every 30 minutes over the three providers that will be there for adults. So I think easing back into things and going very slow in our rate of bringing things back and allowing the end of that curve to stay flatter as it comes back down is going to be important. I do understand the idea of people being worried about the economy. It is tragic what's happening to our economy, but I think we have to trust in the fact that our economy was the best it's been ever before this happened. Thank God that's where we were at. And I think we'll get back there really fast because we're Americans and that's what we do.
Right. But, you know, I know the economy is important, but I would put health and safety and well-being
exactly.
for all of our citizens a little bit above that.
The economy does not get better if we're all dead from COVID-19.
Right, exactly.
And that's the big thing that we were trying to do is not necessarily completely, absolutely prevent coronavirus from happening. It's to slow it down so we don't overwhelm the healthcare systems, kind of like what's happening up in New York. And just because we do start to open things back up, there's certain phases like the White House has put out. There's like three different phases of opening up. And depending on that criteria, when you can move forward with that. Mm-hmm. There's also, if we start to see an increase in cases again, we can step back, you know.
Yeah.
So that's a possibility that could happen again whenever that second wave comes.
Very fluid and ever-changing thing. So, yeah, if we start seeing changes in the community, we'll ratchet that back quickly.
Yeah. I know Senator Moran, listening to him this morning, he was talking with people with KU Health Systems, and they have their daily briefings. And, of course, one of the things they had talked about was the money that continues to funnel in to get more testing. I think it was like $25 billion.
Isn't that amazing?
It's just incredible to obviously provide this more testing. But one of the things that was brought up in that discussion was there was a reporter out of Kansas City who had asked the question regarding self-testing and citizens being able to test themselves, because I guess there are areas in Kansas City now that are starting to provide citizens with test kits so they can test themselves without actually going. And, you know, my thought is, how accurate can that really be if someone just gives me and tells me, hey, here's a test for coronavirus, here's what you got to do it. There's like so many nooks and crannies in there that it just has to be so accurate. I just don't know if that's necessarily a good idea, is it?
The difficult part is there's a lot of people out there trying to make a buck at the wrong time. And they may be doing it for the right reasons. They may be doing it for the wrong reasons. I don't know where their heart stands. But there will be tests out there that it's not like a pregnancy test. You either have HCG at a certain level or you don't. You're pregnant or you're not. With coronavirus, there's lots of other coronaviruses besides this one. And if you don't do a test that's very specific for that type of coronavirus, coronavirus, you can get a lot of false positives because it'll be sensitive to all those other coronavirus types. So you may get someone with a common cold that says they're COVID positive when they're really not. And you may have other people actually that their test is based off an IgG or IgM that's a home test where you take a drop of blood from your finger and do it. And those we're finding are very, very much having false negatives because not enough blood volume. So as we get antibody testing, that needs to be a blood draw that comes from your arm. There's no finger stick. Jump around that right now. And as we do these other tests that are going to be done with a nasal swab, it is a very difficult swab to get. It goes straight through your nose to the back in the middle of your head. So at the back of your throat where your uvula hangs down, up behind that is where the end of that swab ends up. So anybody that's had the test understands how brutal that is. So you can't just swab at the front. And we'll have a lot of people out there that won't swab in the right place like right. You were talking about earlier when we talked. And that will end up with a lot of false negatives too. And you'll have people then running around who think they're fine and they're not.
Yeah.
So, and how often do you retest those people? Do you test every 3 days? Do you test every week? That's a financial burden on the community that I think is not appropriate.
I just think it needs to still be left up to the healthcare professionals that know what they're doing.
If you have symptoms, if you think you have it, go to your provider, call your provider's office or go to the emergency room, call ahead, of course, and say, I think I have this, get triaged and find out for sure what the best plan is for you.
Go ahead.
You could also call 688-6566. That's the main clinic number. And then we can refer you to the COVID clinic. From there, if you do feel like you have it, we do have testing capabilities. And I know that there's a lot of, stuff going out about, trying to ramp up the testing. We've always had testing kits available at our facility, and that's definitely not a worry. So if anybody is needing to be tested, they have been tested.
And we do both have public testing through KDHE as well as through private labs like LabCorp.
Right. It's crazy with the... with the testing, because at least in my opinion, I spoke to you guys about this before we came on the air here, but there was a report out of Labette County that a Labette County patient both tested positive and negative for the virus, and it depends on what stage the virus could be in. It's almost surprising to me that we haven't seen more cases of that. I mean, it's with maybe false and negative tests. I mean, they seem to be pretty accurate, but is it surprising at all that we haven't seen more of those kind of cases?
Well, I mean, I think that just happens all the time anyway, even with the flu. Somebody could come in, one day and test negative for the flu, but still have the same symptoms, and then two days later test positive for the flu. So it's just... Well, nothing's perfect. Nothing's 100%.
With any test, you've got a certain amount of whatever needs to be present to trigger that test to be positive. Yep. And if you have, one day it's up high enough and the next day you're getting better, you might have a negative test,
Right.
So those can wax and wane, but depending on what test that you were talking about,
And the viral shedding, when the virus is shedding the most, too.
Yeah. Okay. And like I said, if that viral shedding slows down or you're not to that point yet where you're having great viral shedding, you may not test positive. So it can be hit and miss. Nothing is 100%. We talk as physicians about tests being very sensitive, meaning that you pick up all kinds of things, like all the coronaviruses, or very specific to the one coronavirus. And even tests that are we try to make as specific as possible, their sensitivity isn't the best. But it's a great screening tool, but it doesn't capture 100%.
A few more minutes here with Dr. Whitney Klein and infection prevention nurse Pilar Davis from CRMC. Appreciate their time here this morning. We're going to bleed a little bit into the 9 o'clock hour. A couple more things with you both. One thing I wanted to get your opinions on is, so now we're at the point where areas are going to start reopening some things up, some local businesses. I know Oklahoma, starting today, they're letting things like hair salons and spas and some things like businesses like that reopen up, but it's like by appointment only. So earlier this week, you had people protesting in Kansas City. They want things reopened now. There's people in Oklahoma who, are thinking that the governor is opening things up a little bit too quickly, but they still want, obviously these businesses to open up. They say the curve is flattening in Oklahoma, but we see the numbers every day. That doesn't seem to be the case right now. I just think, we've already been in this isolation for a month plus, what's a few more weeks? Again, this is just my own personal opinion, but I feel like we're getting to the point where we might be opening things up and might be jumping the gun a little bit too soon.
Well, I think the difference, when you look at Oklahoma, the good part is the governor has made his choice, but Oklahoma City and Tulsa are the two major metropolitan areas in Oklahoma. I personally moved here from Tulsa, so are mayors in Oklahoma City and Tulsa are making their own decisions about their city. So the governor can make his statement, but the cities really have a little more control of what the mayors do about what they want to do. And both of those are really moving pretty slow. So when it comes to the state of Oklahoma, do I think they're opening too soon? I think they're opening at maybe the right time, but they're opening too fast. They're opening too many things at one time. Like we said, moving things out in phases, like Pilar was talking about, that have been the recommendations from the government. And stepping slowly into that is going to be the better way to move, again, to keep that curve flat. The more you get people together, the more the virus is spread. You have that chance, and that peak is going to go up. I think Oklahoma will see a bump in their numbers in the next few weeks, sadly, due to that. But then I hope they'll, you know, people will do their precautions and wear their masks and do those things and flatten that curve back out at that new level. But I think, you know, Kansas City, we talked a little bit about, you know, you've got a lot of people in a very small space. That's why New York has had most of the problems. Inner city areas where people live on top of each other and have low socioeconomic categories for a lot of those people, that can be difficult. A lot of those people are working in what are considered essential jobs, in service jobs like restaurants and grocery stores and things like that. So they're getting hit a little bit harder. And I think the community is ready to get back to a financial normal. But I think the best thing to do is slow and steady, bring it out slow in phases, and, you know, maybe one type of business at a time. If you want to open hair salons, then say, you know, you can open half this week and half the next week, and then, you know, spread it out over a matter of months, kind of like we've done with our clinic. Sadly, I don't have control over the government.
Yeah, and it's more of a community by community basis. It's not necessarily state by state. It's up to, you know, local governments and local
County
communities.
It's not like Wyandotte County or Sedgwick County.
Yeah.
You know, we were laughing earlier. I said people from rural areas, we've been practicing social distancing for a long time. You're
true.
On the farm all by yourself. So we're a little
exactly.
better at that, maybe just by the way we live in general. So there's a chance that we could probably open up sooner than some of those larger towns.
Right. But I feel like some of these larger areas are jumping the gun maybe a little bit sooner than they should be. So, like you said, there's a potential if Oklahoma wants to open some things back up, will the numbers decrease? Probably not.
Well, and then I wonder, too, if Oklahoma starts opening things back up, do people from Southeast Kansas start crossing the border and going to Oklahoma for services?
True, yeah.
And dragging COVID from there back up here?
So. Because it's spread. I think a lot of people don't understand is, you know, because I even had someone say, well, you know, they tried to comparing the spread of the flu to the spread of the coronavirus. And I'm like, do you realize how more dangerous the coronavirus spreads, more so than just someone spreading the flu? Like, it is way beyond anything like the flu.
Well, when you look at the total numbers, too, even, like, if you look at New York City, you know, they brought in the Navy ship to be a hospital on the outside. I think only less than 200 patients ended up on that Navy ship because they also opened that one public center to be a hospital area as well. And New York, once things got crazy and they shut down, they really put a cap on it and they started flattening that curve. It really helped and they didn't need that Navy ship. And they never really got low on their ventilators in a scary way. They had places they could draw ventilators from. So we've never really got to that point where we're completely out. So I think we've done a good job at that. But again, I think places like Coffeyville are much better at following instructions. Maybe country people who are better
used to that social distancing,
doing
what you said.
Well, are used to being, you know, courteous to each other and thinking about their neighbor a lot more.
Right.
And we're not as hushed and hurried as everybody else. So I think, you know, we're doing a much better job.
Yeah, I think the big thing with the difference between the coronavirus and the flu is that the infection window period, too. With the flu, it's usually you become infected or show symptoms from infection like 3 days after exposure. But with the coronavirus, it's anywhere from 2 to 14 or maybe even beyond.
Well, that's what I was trying to go with that New York story, is that they went up really fast.
Yep.
And we had so many people sick so fast. And yes, it kind of got capped off. But we don't see that during flu season normally because we have flu vaccine that prevents a lot of it. And, you know, people are... they're getting the flu and they're passing it around, but there's so many people that are vaccinated, you get a little bit of that herd immunity from everybody being vaccinated. So it's completely different. Now, I think someday when we get a coronavirus vaccine, we may get to that point with coronavirus as well, but that's going to be a couple years away at least.
Yeah, minimum.
So for right now, yeah, that curve, when you look at COVID, it went straight up. And the one for influenza always makes a nice little curve and goes back down and doesn't have that dramatic peak to it like we've been seeing with COVID.
You're listening to the Mighty 690 KGGF here in Coffeyville. I'm Brandon Salmon. Real quick, about to wrap things up with infection prevention nurse Pilar Davis and Dr. Whitney Klein with CRMC. Appreciate their great information here today to all of our community members, continuing to keep everyone up to date in regards to COVID-19. So the last thing I want to ask you before we get you out of here today, So how is the hospital planning on once we do get to the downward slope of this virus and things start to flatten out and things start getting better, how is the hospital going to kind of plan on readjusting everything, getting kind of services back up to normal? I mean, is there a plan kind of in place for the hospital to get back to normal once we do hit that point?
Yes, definitely. We like I had mentioned a couple weeks ago, we have a command team that meets on a daily basis, and we have been discussing this, you know, for some time. And of course, we follow the guidelines for the phases of reopening. And the important thing here is to make sure that we're monitoring what's going on with COVID, of course, in the community. So even as we take those steps forward to reopen and get services going again, if we were to see a spike, of course, we would backtrack and kind of maybe start closing things up again a little bit. But that's the important thing, is just monitoring.
I think that the main thing, the ER has always been kind of open. The hospital floor is what it is. Our newborn nursery right now, you can't stop babies from being born. So they're there. By the way, they're adorable. And but, you know, we've limited the number of visitors there. And I don't think that's a bad thing right now. We don't really have family members, you know, dying without family around, because CRMC is very open to helping families be with their loved ones at this time and being safe in that. But I think the first step, like we said, is opening the clinic up a little bit more, a little bit at a time, and then looking at other services like surgeries and things like that. When do we start letting elective surgeries happen? And that's part of the thing the task force is helping us with at the hospital, is determine when is that going to happen. But
right.
I think the first steps are to start with the clinic, and if things start looking good, then we'll talk about those surgeries and things as time goes on.
And even in those, as we do open up, they're going to be slow steps.
You know? Absolutely.
I mean, we're still going to limit visitors, you know, for a certain amount of time. And I think the new norm really is going to be wearing the masks. I mean, we're probably going to be wearing masks for quite a while and practicing social distancing still. And,
yeah.
Even though we do continue to open things up slowly, just so that we don't all of a sudden just overwhelm the community with COVID again.
One thing I would like to stress for the community is, we were talking, Pilar and I, earlier about how the flu vaccine sometimes is available in July or August even. When the flu vaccine is available, please, I beg the public, please get your flu shot. If we have flu season coming in and a COVID second wave at the same time, that's going to be horrible.
Yeah, it's again, they expect that to be very much possible. I had seen something, you know, a Harvard researcher, you know, saying that we might be practicing social distancing until 2022.
Yeah.
So
with the flu vaccine, I hear all kinds of things in the clinic. Oh, last time I got the shot, I had the flu. There is no live virus in the flu vaccine anymore that's injectable. So if you get a flu shot, you are not getting the virus itself.
It's a hyperimmune response is what that is. It's your body building antibodies to the virus.
I always tell patients, you know, it's like if you took a leg off a spider, the leg from the spider can't bite you, right? But that's what, a piece of the virus is in the vaccine, and your body responds to it because it's seeing a piece of something and it wants to know if it's real or not. So you get a little bit of fever, you may get a little runny nose, and then you get better. So when you get the real flu, you're down, 104 fever for 2 weeks, pneumonia, ear infections come on, things like that. It's serious when you have the real flu. So, and sometimes the flu shot doesn't quite cover every, we have a flu A and a flu B every year that's a different strain, and sometimes it doesn't quite cover so well. But last year we had not the best coverage on B, but real good coverage on A. But those that were vaccinated that ended up testing positive for flu B maybe had a runny nose and a fever for a couple of days, and then they got better. Those that didn't have it were out, like the really bad cases of flu. So I think, you know, getting the flu shot is better. I know I have a lot of parents that are worried about preservatives in vaccines and things like that. We don't use mercury in vaccines anymore as a preservative. There is an aluminum that's in there now as a preservative, but if you ever drink, you know, a six pack of soda out of an aluminum can, you probably got more aluminum from drinking those sodas than you did from all the vaccines you'll get in your life. So I want to encourage parents to not be afraid of getting their kids and themselves vaccinated.
And finally, despite areas who are trying to reopen things back up, maybe, again, it's my personal opinion, maybe a little bit sooner than we should be, but at least here in our community, Coffeyville, Montgomery County, we talked before we came on the air, it seems like we are doing a very good job with the social distancing,
yes,
and practicing,
yep,
these practices, and
we got to
continue to do this a little bit longer.
Our mayor and our superintendent of schools closing down the schools when he did. I mean, there were so many great decisions made so early by local leadership, whether it's political leadership or hospital leadership or business leadership. I can't stress how much we've done a good service to ourselves by how we've responded.
Right, and I think we just... again, we've done it a month plus. You know, what's another couple weeks to help break this a little bit? That's just how I feel. I know the economy needs to get back up. I know these small businesses need to get back up. I know people are hurting.
I know parents are frustrated with homeschooling.
Oh my gosh, I can't speak on that. Can't even imagine.
Enough. You're not homeschooling your child. You're crisis schooling your child. It's a different thing. Look at my webpage. My Facebook page. You'll find a description of the difference.
But again,
hang in there, parents. It will get better.
Hang in there. But again, I think first and foremost, well-being, safety,
absolutely,
the health of everybody is
public health. Yep.
Yeah, it's just the most important thing. Dr. Whitney Klein, infection prevention nurse, Pilar Davis, joining us here this morning on KGGF. We appreciate you both for coming in. I know this is a good segment for us to have on Friday mornings to continue to recap everything that's going on with COVID-19 here in Coffeyville and in our county as well. So
happy to be here, and thank you for your great questions.
Yeah, well, you know, it's easy when we can discuss things before we come on the air. It's beautiful stuff. So appreciate the great info. We'll have hopefully somebody again next week for Pilar. Dr. Whitney Klein, we appreciate it very much. We are, again, bleeding past 9:10 here this morning. We will have open line coming up here in just a little bit. So keep it locked in. We appreciate you both. Thanks again. We'll have this up on our website in just a little bit. So we'll take a break. Open line coming up in just a few minutes here on KGGF.